Good evening, guys, and welcome to the F1 India Quali Podcast, where we aim at spreading the awareness of the sport and creating a forum of discussion for all F1 fans. You can check out our podcast on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook by the handle f1india.community. We have panelists today, Shabir and Avi, who will join us in the discussion of this intense quali round that we had this weekend at Baku, Azerbaijan, the sixth race of the calendar. It was quite an intense quali with red all over. We had four red flags throughout the whole session, which ended in quite a surprise with Charles Leclerc on the pole. Right into Q1. Now, at turn 15, we see a lot of drivers crashing into that corner, you know. So what could be the actual reason for them, you know, to actually get into that turn and put their car to the wall? Because they've had 45 plus laps over the weekend, over three practice sessions, but only 1 hour each. So does the duration of the practice session come into play here?
Brandon, I think, of course, the track time is obviously the most critical aspect to any sport racing championship. And we've seen in the practice sessions that, you know, these guys were just getting obstacles and they were like not able to get the flying laps in. And everybody, either they were just spinning in turns 2 and 3 or maybe turn 7 and 8 and 15s, and nobody was able to get their flying laps and, you know, their quali simulations laps together. And obviously, you know, all these things got in the way in quali. And obviously, then there were red flags. So these guys just literally had 4 to 5 minutes of each session to post their flying laps. So, you know, that pressure plus that lack of experience from their practice. And also, you know, these guys were saying that they were gusty winds. So, you know, all these things combined to probably these guys were just pushing their limits, and which they hadn't tested in the practice session. So it kind of like, you know, came together and we saw a few accidents there.
Right. I totally agree, you know, because even the practice sessions previously used to be for an hour and a half, and where drivers used to get enough time in the car to test out their race sims, the qualification sims. But now we see drivers coming out onto the tracks on two different times. That's during the first half and then during the last 15 minutes. So it's become quite tight, and it also affects the confidence of the car. Shabir, would you like to add anything to this?
So I personally feel that lack of practice hours, I mean, the session were reduced by 30 minutes, only the FP1 and FP2. I don't think so that is causing too much of trouble. If you listen to the commentators during the qualifying, there was one very interesting point that was brought up. There are quite a few corners in the Baku circuit that are 90 degrees. And you have one single point to make that correct judgment and take the turn. Okay, to take the corner. If you miss that point, you will miss the entire this thing. And then, like another other proper circuits, they have this little bit of runoff area where you can cover it up, or you can, you know, make that slight correction while taking the corner or something like that if you miss it. That opportunity is not there in Baku. And let's not forget, after that particular, it's a very fast part of circuit, one of the fast part of circuit. So if you get that point wrong, you miss it. And as we all know, all the drivers, you know, they take the every single tenth out of the lap. So they push and they make a mistake and they crash. So I don't think so. It is lack of practice, but it is just the zeal to go forward and get the best out of car in the lap. That's it.
Yes, I totally agree. These corners in Baku, especially Sector 2, they're quite slow corners. And I believe one of the corners is actually slower than the ones in Monaco. So this track is actually divided into two parts. You know, they say it's half Monza and half Monaco. It really tests the limits. Moving on to Russell at the Williams. Now, he suffered a leakage of the engine in free practice 3. And he was provided with an older engine. And the the workforce actually got that engine and the car together quite well in advance, given the red flag of Lance Stroll. Now, does it actually question the efficiency of the engine? Because Russell made it into Q2, but Latifi lagged behind. So does it really question the efficiency of the engine, or does it still question the ability of Latifi and his future in Formula One?
Personally, I have always been a fan of George Russell, and you know, since his junior career, and we know that, you know, George Russell is in a different league. You know, he's not an average like average Formula One driver. He's probably one of the best ones, and I think it eventually comes down to the fact that like someone, Martin Brundle or Crofty, said that, you know, we should start expecting, you know, Q2 performances instead of being surprised by them. And, you know, he's just making it look like, you know, Q2 is something Williams should be in. And obviously, basically the car is capable of getting into Q2. And eventually, like you said, it comes down to Latifi to also, you know, step up his game and, you know, start delivering some better performances, because Russell is definitely showing that, you know, it's not the car. The car definitely deserves Q2. But I think obviously Latifi needs to learn, and George is much, much better than, you know, a lot of guys on the track. That's what I personally believe. If he's given the right machinery, he'll probably beat Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen. That's what I feel. So yeah, I guess it's more of George Russell being really good, and obviously Latifi needs to, you know, step up his game.
I would just like to add a couple of points to what Aguilar has already mentioned over here. As much as George is an excellent world championship material, Latifi lacks that little bit of confidence. Probably the car is not suiting his driving style or something like that, you know. It is, whenever I see George Russell drive that Williams into Q2 or unexpected positions, or probably that Imola crash which happened with Bottas, he was challenging Bottas for a position. That reminds me of young Fernando Alonso or young Schumacher, who are pushing the car beyond its limits to, you know, the position where they really show what a drive and, you know, bring fun factor into the element. So that is also one thing that we need to consider.
I agree with both your opinions, and I would want to point out a particular, you know, Mercedes had given, as you mentioned, give the engines to all the customer teams, but McLaren had a strategic advantage on straight line speed, which didn't quite show over the weekend. So where does that potential lie? Was it in the older engine that they had? Because as Charles Leclerc had mentioned yesterday, that Ferrari have done quite better than expected. And one key aspect to that would be because McLaren hadn't showed what they have on the pace that they have on track. So where does that straight line speed now lie? Because that's what made the McLaren MCL35M, as Carlos Sainz had mentioned, a rocket.
So what you need to consider at this point of time in that scenario is, Brandon, that it's not just the engine mode or engine capability that drives the car or faster under straight line speed. It's the chassis as well. Now, if you take into consider, you know, Mercedes probably have struggled all along the weekend, but we see what has happened in Q3. Hamilton has gone on to P2, but eventually, they have gone different ways. Bottas has gone with a different kind of chassis, and Lewis has gone with a different type of chassis. Okay, so I think we all know the capability of McLaren in the chassis department are one of the best, one of the superiors. Combine that with the strongest engine on the track of Mercedes, I think they are supposed to go wonders. You know, it is just a period of time when McLaren will have both of its cars, you know, in Q3 and challenging for the podiums and wins very soon, once Daniel Ricciardo gets his form back or the confidence of the car back. So that's my take on how McLaren sees the situation.
Yeah, so I have a theory here. You know, I just came up with this theory. So we've seen that, you know, Daniel Ricciardo has a different driving style. And I read an article somewhere that Andreas Seidel was saying that they'll probably try to change the car to suit Daniel more. And, you know, I'm just throwing out this theory that maybe McLaren is tweaking their car a little bit so that, you know, it helps out Daniel Ricciardo. And because of that, they are losing out, you know, kind of the peak performance which we had seen them show, you know, in the first four races. That's just a theory which I'm just thinking. Maybe, you know, McLaren is sacrificing some of their peak performance to you know, adjust, to let Daniel adjust to their car. Maybe that's happening because like you guys are saying, McLaren was expected to be faster than Ferrari on this weekend, especially their straight line speed with the McLaren and with the Mercedes engine. But we didn't see that, and there's definitely some reason, something going on behind the scenes. And maybe it could be McLaren, you know, just changing a little bit on their car so that, you know, then Daniel feels a little more at home in McLaren.
Right. Adding to that point, as we move into Q2, now, Ricciardo and McLaren. McLaren mentioned at the launch of their car that Norris was a key player in the development of the car, even for 2022. And they even said that they're going to build the team around him. So does that affect the confidence of Daniel in the car? Because Ricciardo is the guy who has been adjusting at a team over the past 2-3 years. He's constantly moved to different teams. So was that decision of constantly moving to different teams a disadvantage? And was this coming to McLaren a bigger add-on to that disadvantage? Because, you know, the team is going to be built around Lando Norris.
See, once you have a specific style of driving, definitely switching teams a lot more can cause you trouble. But we are talking about professional athletes over here, whose primary job is to drive Formula One cars. Okay? So, if you see over the years, okay, I'll give you an example of Carlos Sainz. This is probably the fifth team that he's representing after Toro Rosso, Renault, McLaren, Ferrari, fourth team, sorry. But we see he's doing very, very good with Ferrari. Probably because the expectation was low, or because he spent a couple of races learning the car very importantly, or the fact of the matter is that both Charles and Carlos don't have a specific driving style. It can be any of these things. But if you say that switching around the teams hampers you, I would partially agree and then disagree also at the same point, because we have example of Carlos Sainz as well. So the disagreement at this point of time is to have a particular driving style which causes this disadvantage, not switching of the team.
Yeah, I'll just add to Shabir's point that specifically, I mean, the fact that he has a unique driving style, and McLaren had already probably committed towards, you know, building the car around Lando, like you said. So obviously, when you come to a new team, you would obviously not be the priority person, even if you're a senior Formula One driver. The team already had their, you know, resources built around Lando. So that, plus the fact that Daniel has a kind of a unique style, I think like these both things are combining to the fact that, you know, he's not getting that comfort, probably like what Carlos Sainz is getting in Ferrari.
That's quite a good point, because I'd like to point out, Carlos Sainz is a guy who gets behind the engineering of a car, quite similar to Vettel. When you move to a new team, he tries to understand in depth of the car. And yes, the time that they spent at Maranello, where, you know, they tested out the 2018 F1 Ferrari, and, you know, they found the potential that where Carlos Sainz lies and what the car needs to develop. I think that was very crucial into his development, and that's what lacked in McLaren's approach. They didn't really have a session with Ricciardo to actually fill in the gaps where it lies. So they're having those problems right now, as well as with Vettel, and Alonso's picked up quite well in that circumstances. So yes, it's quite evident that Ricciardo is at a strategic disadvantage, but we all hope that, you know, he rises up and we get to see the Ricciardo that he was back in 2017, 2018.
I'll just add a point to this, is that personally, being a McLaren fan, you know, it's kind of hurting McLaren's chances of fighting with Ferrari for P3. You know, so, you know, the fact apart that, you know, Daniel's having a hard time, I mean, McLaren overall is losing out big time to Ferrari. And obviously, it just kind of, this is the third race, he's not qualified in. He's not went into Q3, and that's a big deal when you're fighting for Q3 in Formula One. So it's going to hurt McLaren at the end of the year. Yeah, that's
very rightly pointed out. Moving on to Vettel missing out onto Q3 by just 0.03 seconds. Now, Vettel was quite gutted at the end, but to understand the strategic advantage that he has of tires, because this track is known for tire degradation. So do you think the choice of tires actually will play a huge part of his run tomorrow at the race?
Probably, yes. Why not? Tire choice are always crucial in street circuits, you know. So let's see. Let's hope for the best. I know it was a very... every driver wants to make the Q through appearance and, you know, get their team in the top 10. Obviously, it helps to boost the confidence and give the driver confidence in his car as well. But then let's not forget, not qualifying or qualifying 11th is a strategic boon as well. I mean, we all know what has happened to Vettel when we go back to that 2013 or 2012 Abu Dhabi GP, where he started from the pit lane. He won the race, or he was very close to winning the race, right? So sometimes starting from the back is also an advantage, and who better known is than Vettel itself. Of course, it is a disappointment not to make it to the Q3, but then it was an accident which happened again on turn 15, which caused the red flag. I'm sure if that had not happened, he might have gone on to Q3 as well. He had the pace, to be precise.
I think Sebastian is actually technically in a better position, because all the other guys in front of him are going to be on softs, and soft is going to degrade like crazy in Baku. And obviously, there's a chance that, you know, Sebastian will start on mediums. So he can go deep, and, you know, he's shown in Spain, I think last year or last year, that he can go really long into the race. And he ended up sixth because, you know, he could pull his tires up to a long stint. And if he can do that tomorrow, you know, actually he's in a good position, because when the other guys are probably pitting around lap 15 or something, and he's on a medium, he can definitely, you know, go to lap 25 or lap 30 before moving to the hard. And that should give him a position on the track. And it's like I said, it's actually a strategic boon for him, because he can start on the mediums.
I totally agree. And adding to your points, even there's quite a lot of history where players and drivers starting at the back of the grid at positions like P15, P11, P20, but have ended up on a podium. For example, Carlos Sainz back in Brazil 2019, where he had an excellent run from back of the grid right up till third position on the podium. So it is going to be a huge advantage being on the mediums, as Avi rightly pointed out, that cars will pit around lap 15 to lap 20 and probably push the soft tires, because they know they're going to work it out within a one-stop window. So that's the opportunity that lies for Vettel, where he can gain places by pitting later on onto a hard. Moving on to Q3, now this was the big talk. I mean, if we look at the chain reaction, Valtteri Bottas, followed by Lewis Hamilton, followed by Charles Leclerc. Now, Bottas wanted to warm up his tires because he didn't have a toe in front of him. But Hamilton put in a lap because Bottas gave him a toe. And now followed by Charles Leclerc, who actually used the toe from Hamilton. Now, what are your thoughts on that? Did Valtteri Bottas should have put in a lap during the last segment? During the last qualification, that's Q3?
Let's accept one fact over here that Charles Leclerc, though got a toe from Hamilton, it was not planned. Okay, it was definitely not planned, and it was sheer coincidence that Leclerc got the toe from Hamilton, who was setting up his own timings over there. Hamilton was definitely getting a toe from Bottas, and he was not in a position to set his own time because he was going very ahead. He was ahead, and he was probably helping Hamilton to set the time during the first run of the Q3. So that's where I think it was a strategic move of Bottas not setting the time, or probably he made a mistake at the end of sector 2 or starting of the sector 3, where he might have missed out. So that is the reason he might not have given the time over there.
Right. And I'd actually like to point out that, as you mentioned, Charles Leclerc, nothing was planned, because that's absolutely true, because Leclerc went very fast in the second sector itself. And the last bit of sector three, that's the fastest on the track, that was just an added advantage that Hamilton possibly gave to Leclerc, that he went at top of the chart. Anything to add, Avi, to this?
Like you guys have said, obviously it was not planned on Charles' part, and technically Lewis also had a toe from Valtteri. So you can say, I mean, both of them had a toe, and still Leclerc came out ahead of the Mercedes and the Red Bull. So I think it simply points out to the fact that Ferrari does have pace, and I guess even maybe they also don't know why they have the pace. But it's definitely that Ferrari is really fast. And Valtteri going for a second warm-up lap, it's purely down to the driver. I think even during the qualifying, the commentators said that, you know, should he have gone on a flying lap after one warm-up lap? But it's like, I think it was somebody there who said that, you know, when you're braking into turn one, you know, turn one is the heaviest braking corner there. And if you don't feel that grip that you need into turn one, you just use that confidence for the whole lap. And I think that's what he said, that, you know, after one warm-up lap, if Valtteri is not feeling that confidence into turn one, they generally go for a second warm-up lap because they feel the tires are not in the, you know, right temperature window. In that particular lap, it's purely down to the driver. You know, you can't make strategies for these kind of things. And it's just depending on the feel and the intuition of the drivers. But I think eventually, with Valtteri ahead of Lewis, it had to happen that Lewis obviously would get the toe from Valtteri. And it wouldn't have changed anything eventually, because as far as I know, Mercedes has this concept that, you know, these guys, the drivers, on every weekend, they choose whether they give the toe or they take the toe. And obviously this weekend was Lewis's opportunity to, you know, take that choice, and he chose to, you know, go behind Valtteri. So, I mean, it's just probably rotten luck for Valtteri this time out, that he also couldn't get the second run when Yuki crashed out. So, kind of, you know, just bad luck continuing for Valtteri again.
Also, the Bottas and Hamilton are a different chassis, as I mentioned earlier. They have a difference. So that can also be one of the reasons, you know, why Bottas required one more warming up lap.
I agree. And starting from P10 tomorrow, ahead of Vettel and the likes of Kimi Raikkonen and Russell, and Ricardo, who have strategic advantage on their tires, puts Bottas in a tough spot tomorrow, and we all hope that he gains quite a few places tomorrow on the first lap. Now, moving on to the second row of the grid, which is quite interesting and controversial, is Max Verstappen and Pierre Gasly. What are your thoughts on that AlphaTauri driver, guys?
I think this is something which, you know, Pierre Gasly, we have seen off and on, you know, with Pierre Gasly, that he is able to pick up that AlphaTauri and, you know, put it in positions that, you know, you don't expect them to be. And that kind of speaks of his quality of, you know, how good he is as a driver. Obviously, he got a massive toe from Yuki, And like these guys were saying, it could, you know, almost amount to half a second of an advantage. But you still, you know, you can't take away from the fact that everybody else ahead of him also got a toe. And even behind him, those guys got a toe, most of them. So, you know, it's kind of justified where he is. And it kind of shows to the world, you know, how good Pierre is. And probably if he had the you know, support of the team at Red Bull, he might have done wonders there. And but yeah, tomorrow's race start is going to be exciting because I think Pierre wants to show to Red Bull that, you know, he's in the fight tomorrow and he's going to fight for P3 with Max. And I think it's going to be crazy.
You know, I really feel that Red Bull is not in picture anymore, and Pierre Gasly now definitely does not think about Red Bull anymore. I think that guy is now just proving himself, his worth, and just showing the world how good and how capable of a driver he is. Red Bull is no picture at all for him. Let us go back in 2019, that Brazilian Grand Prix, where he hold of Lewis Hamilton on the last lap by few inches. That was a confidence booster for the guy. That's my personal feeling. From there on, the guy has believed in himself. And Toro Rosso, now AlphaTauri, has given him a very good car, coupled with that Honda engine, which has developed very nicely. They have given him a very nice car. He's able to adjust to that car. And he does not have any pressure. That is one of the things. And he's comfortable in that car, and that is why he's pulling up the results. We all know what scenario we have at Red Bull. He might be under pressure. Car was not suiting him, blah, blah, blah. Everything is okay, fine. But here, I think the guy feels like home. And when you're home, your concentration is only on driving fast. That's it.
I agree, because that AlphaTauri especially looks strong, very strong in Q3. With Tsunoda going up the time charts in FP3 and even in making it into his first appearance in Qualification 3. And yes, that guy is an absolute banger. And that's where I find a similarity between Pierre Gasly and Charles Leclerc. Now, if you see, Pierre Gasly suffered a lot of bad decisions, bad moves in his career, and Charles Leclerc suffered a lot with the car in 2020. But both of them have so much potential that they've outdone all expectations and come out on top. Right, guys, moving to the prediction. What would be the number of red flags for tomorrow, and who would be the winner of the race? Over to you.
I think Max or Perez will win the race. I think it's a Red Bull all over. The reason I'm saying this is because Ferrari have gone for a low downforce front wing and aerodynamics. So, the race pace would be hampered a bit for the long run. So, I think my prediction for the race is Red Bull, Ferrari and a Red Bull. And for the red flags, I think, I don't think so we'll see any red flags, but 3 or 4 safety cars for sure.
Yeah, I'll also say that probably, you know, let me give it to Charles Leclerc. What's the harm in that? Maybe he's doing the prediction. So I'll predict that, you know, Charles will somehow hold on to the first position and he'll probably get overtaken somewhere, but he'll, you know, come back after the pit stop somehow. So I'll say Charles will win it. Probably, yeah, Max would come second and Lewis is going to come third. I mean, eventually, you need to put a Mercedes on the podium. You can't ignore that. And I also hope Daniel Ricciardo comes back into the points. That's a big deal for McLaren. And for red flags, yeah, let's hope for at least one red flag. And nobody gets injured or hurt, but just for the fun of it. One red flag and probably, you know, 2 safety cars so that we get a lot of restarts and, you know, mixing up where, you know, Charles can probably hold on to that lead. So, yeah, that's my prediction.
I'm going to go for a very bold prediction here. So, as Avi mentioned, I'm going to go for Charles Leclerc to redeem himself from Monaco and probably bag the win of the race. But I'm going to expect a red flag due to a clash between an AlphaTauri and a Red Bull. Now, I don't want to take names to create a controversy, but it's going to be a Red Bull or an AlphaTauri that crashes, and it's going to be a mixed podium of another Red Bull and a Mercedes with Carlos Sainz and...
Sorry, I'm interrupting you, but you already took the names indirectly. Let's not play the game over here. You already took
it. Yes. I mean, it's going to be a Red Bull and an AlphaTauri for sure. So let's hope and watch tomorrow what happens. All right, guys. Tomorrow's race is going to be an absolute thriller. Trust me, because we don't know what's coming our way. It's Baku. It's high. It's low. It's got corners. It's got straights. It's everything you could ask for and a wholesome circuit. So watch out for the race tomorrow. Thank you so much, guys, for being a part of this discussion today. And you viewers, thank you so much for listening to us. And do share your thoughts on all our pages on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter by the name f1india.community. Thank you so much, guys, and have a lovely evening ahead.
Thank you. Enjoy the race, guys.